All right, we are back. Then there were four. College football playoffs down to four. Brent Rollins joining me again, member PFF, and rivals. But Brent, I wrote down this, 7 versus 6 and 8 versus 5, because that's the world we live in. And that's the seedings of the teams that are left in it. So it's kind of fun that, you know, you usually we've seen so much chalk over the years. Like, you've seen so much, like, this is clearly the best team going into the 14 playoff, and that team won over and over again consistently. And now we go to 12, and with more parity, you got 7 versus 6 and 8 versus 5. So it's kind of fun. And Orange Bowl is first, sir. Penn State and Notre Dame. And what you thinking about that game, sir?
I'll say a follow-up question to that. Do you think it's the best four?
I mean, we never know the full answer to that question, but it's the four most deserving at this point because they've earned their way there and they've won football games. I could argue that some teams that have already played, that if they played 10 times, maybe it's a different story, but it's not. So right. I think
in general, yes, it is. Yeah. Like, from a talent perspective, and you know, obviously you're just missing Georgia and Oregon in terms of rank. The rest of the four are the top, the next four in the rankings, 2 through or 3 through 6. So I do think you're getting, and the beautiful part about it is you're getting great games, and you're getting, especially if you're, you know, the TV product side of it, you're getting Ohio State, Texas, Penn State, Notre, you're getting brand name.
You're saying great games now. You're saying we're going to get great games moving forward is what you're saying, not what we've had in the past?
No, I think well, one game maybe. Yeah. I'm not sure about one game.
We've had some pretty bad playoff games so far. But, again, the NFL does every year too. Like, that's just part of it. That's going to happen. I don't know if we'll continue to have to great games the rest of the way, but I think the Orange Bowl, I don't see any way, shape, or form how this is a blowout. I really don't.
No.
I think if you play this game 10 times, I think it's going to be close all 10 times. Like, barring some kind of catastrophic, you know, stupid meltdown of turnover fest, which neither team does. I mean, they just don't do that real. They don't shoot themselves in the foot. That's not their MOs. I think we're in line for a pretty dang good game.
Yeah, I think it's – I wrote – like, the first note that I wrote down about this game is Georgia versus Notre Dame 2.0. I mean, I think in terms of – style of game, both teams, Georgia or Penn State obviously has their quarterback, so that's a different element. But just in terms of where it's going to be one mistake or one big play, 2-1-2 at most, that decides the game, I think that's what it's going to come down to. And if you look back at Georgia Notre Dame, if you told me, hey, somebody's going to be aggressive when they shouldn't have been, there's going to be a lot of self-inflicted wounds, projecting it forward, I would say, oh, that's kind of a Penn State thing. At least they've done that a lot recently. Well, that was Georgia against Notre Dame. So if Penn State can remove that element of the self-inflicted part, the maybe being aggressive when they necessarily shouldn't be, this is going to be just that, a four-quarter late, you know, who scores late, who makes the mistake in the second half, who makes the one big play in the, you know, second half game where or first team to get to 20.
Yeah, and we've said that a bunch, it seems like, in the playoffs, but, like, Notre Dame is aggressive. Defensively, they're going to get in your kitchen. They're going to blitz. They're going to play man-to-man the majority of the time, almost you know, 60% of the time. They're a man-to-man team. That's just what they do. Like, they are unapologetic. And so to beat them, you're going to have to beat them out wide. And we've talked about this all year long with Penn State. Like, Warren is by far their best playmaker outside of Singleton and Allen in the backfield. And so who can continue to step up? And I'd go back to the last game, and you saw Omar do it for Penn State. Like, you saw number 5, Omar Evans. Like, I think he's the guy that – he's the speedster. He's the guy on the outside. If Notre Dame wants to play aggressive and play man, you've got to make those plays. Listen, Georgia had opportunities. I mean, Bell dropped it. Arian Smith caught it. Probably should have scored, but couldn't tuck it away. And then Parker Washington happened on the sidelines. Parker Jones happened on the sideline, which was crazy as it is. But, like, I feel like you have to make those plays on the outside. I think Notre Dame at safety is really, really good, which sets up well for a matchup with Ty Warren, because that dude obviously is a baller. Nobody has to tell you that. But that aggressive style for Notre Dame, they've lived on it all year. They lived on it versus Georgia. They were successful. They're going to live on it again against Penn State. And how that matchup comes out, I think decides a big part of the game.
And 29, Gray, the other corner for Notre Dame. That's who got attacked by Georgia. He's going to – Evans versus him is going to be a matchup down the field. But I think that was actually Georgia's biggest mistake in the game, is they didn't take advantage of Notre Dame's aggressiveness. Double moves, misdirection, pump fake and go.
Screens would have been great.
Faking screens and then trying to throw over the top. I think you're actually going to see a lot of that from Colton Ecky. A lot of misdirection, QB involved in the run game as a reading the defense. Those are things I think you're definitely going to see. But in terms of matchups, Shuler and Watts against Warren is as good as it gets. Because that safety combination, Shuler was the best player on the field, I think, in the Notre Dame.
It'll be mostly Shuler too. He's the guy that spins down. Watts got dinged up. Thank goodness for Notre Dame. He came back in the football game. But Shuler's the guy that spins down. Watts is the guy that number zero that plays in the middle of the field that is awesome. If you want to watch a safety just ball hawk and read quarterback's eyes and go make plays, he's your guy. That to me is the strength of this team. That's the strength of the back end is the safety spots are really, really good. Just like Ohio State. I think Ohio State's really good at that. I think that's the strength of their team. When I watch them and Downs' ability to play in the box, Downs' ability to play tight ends wherever he wants to, he's the ultimate chess piece, I think, especially with the brain. But we'll get to that. But I do think that goes a long way with Ty Warren, because Ty Warren isn't the most freaky athlete. He's 6'6". He runs good, but his superpower is catching the football and breaking tackles after he catches it. And if you got somebody that can come down, play physical, not let him get those catches, that goes a long way in stopping this offense. Go ahead.
I was just gonna say, you said Notre Dame plays a ton of man. They do. Do you think they go 1v1 against Warren consistently, or do they do something different with him?
I think people watch 44 and they say, I think we can cover him. And I think you're just wrong. It's like Brock Bowers. It really feels similar, man. I think you go, I think we can win. I think our guys are better than theirs. I think we can win that matchup. And I wouldn't do it consistently, but I think Notre Dame, that's who they are. I think they're going to do that. I think they're smart enough to mix in double teams. But it's interesting because the way Penn State has evolved offensively, since the Ohio State game, when you watch the tape, Brent, I'm watching the tape and I'm looking for guys to make plays because they don't have a receiver that averages 50 yards plus a game. Literally. I went and looked at the box score today and their stats and stuff. Evans is obviously the guy that I think that is getting the majority of the targets, but they don't have a guy that consistently makes plays on the outside. So I think they've systematically shifted it. And I wrote down these guys. I'm seeing a lot more 16, a lot more 85, and that's Dinkins and Reynolds. They're playing with a lot more tight ends. They're playing with the run game. And I don't think Reynolds is a Warren by any stretch, but they're using Warren as the chess piece. And, they're getting Reynolds open for an easy access, and he gets 5-10 yards and you move the sticks and that's fine. So I think Notre Dame will do that, but I like Penn State's answer. They've done a good job of being very tight end centric to run the football, running the football outside, giving their guys two-way goes with running that duos up front. I think two is good with the running back where he can kind of pick a gap and go and break a tackle. So I think since the Ohio State game, you've definitely seen – the more I watch Penn State, the more I see – the old Georgia teams with Darnell Washington and Bowers, two tight ends and the ultimate chess piece with Warren, move him around. That's what it kind of feels like to me.
So can they run the football? Because I actually thought going into the Georgia-Notre Dame game that Georgia would be able to run the football because of no Mills being hurt and out and a size advantage. But Notre Dame's quickness and movement just created – a cluster for Georgia's offensive line, and they dominated the football game and were more physical from snap one through the end of the game, and slow down Georgia's running game?
Well,
can Penn State be able to run the football?
Well, let's be clear. Georgia couldn't run the ball against anybody. Georgia sucked in the run game. Like, they were awful all year. So, I mean, call a spade a spade. They weren't good at it. And I think Notre Dame, they do such a good job of, yes, they're going to stunt. They're going to move. They tackle really well, Brent. Like, they tackle well. That is one of the strengths of Notre Dame. Not Penn State. Penn State actually doesn't
opposite
tackle
end
well.
Of that spectrum.
Yes. And we'll talk about
the worst
that
in the Power Five.
Yeah, we'll spin that the other direction. But I love Penn State's aggressiveness. I love their defensive approach. I love their system. I love their scheme. But I also think Colton Necky's really good. And I think he'll dial up things to get the run game going. I think he'll dial up QB runs, which is a great part of their offense that they can do. You know, they'll use Warren all over the place. I think it's an interesting chess match. I really do. I don't think the players are good enough on offense for both of these teams. I don't think they're good enough out wide to completely have a big advantage and make explosive plays all over the field for the whole game. Like, I think you can create some of those, but I think the defensive players are better than the offensive players in this matchup. So that's why I'm with you. I think it's a low scoring game.
I'd say we went through that whole part and didn't even mention Drew Aller and what he's done and how he's played and kind of he's gotten the attention of the NFL guys a little bit, the draft
he
guys.
He deserves credit, man. God, he deserves a lot of – Brent, I was not a Drew Aller fan. Like, I would say, Brent, I was the opposite of that. Like, I was kind of like, I don't think this guy –
You're a hater.
I was a hater. Like, here's the thing. I like you. I saw the tools. The arm is huge. Like, I no doubt about it. He's a big,
size,
strong kid.
Ability.
And he's got good athleticism. Like, he's not a freak, but he's got more than enough to make you miss and do what great quarterbacks are doing now, make you play that second play, that third play. I've been impressed with him pushing the ball down the field. I think he's continued to get better at it. I think his ability to feel rushers and take off. Now, I would love for him to feel a rusher, Brent, and step up into the pocket and throw, but he's not there yet. And that's just like when we start to get into draft season, we start breaking down these quarterbacks. Brent, I'm not going to love any of them. I'm just telling you right now. Like, I'm not putting a stamp
of approval
on any of these quarterbacks, you know, at the next level. Shador will not step up in the pocket. Cam Ward will not take layups. Reminds me the playmaking ability of Caleb Williams, but, like, the playing within the system drives me nuts that he won't take the easy stuff. But then he does this superhuman thing where he puts a cape on. It's like, what? How the heck did you do that? So, I think I see the tools with Aller. Colton Necky's been the reason they're here, no doubt about it to me. Like, they have a plan. Does he do too much sometimes? I think at Boise State game, I think he could have lined up and pounded it. Yeah, but I also think his creativity is really fun to watch. Like, the way he's used Warren, he's maximized him. That's what you're supposed to do. So when you're an offensive coordinator or a defensive coordinator, whoever, like, your number one goal is players over plays, period. Like, I have to manufacture way. How do I get 44 the football? Like, that's how this offense should start and finish games and should start and finish drives. And so I think he's done a really good job with that.
All right, you said flip to the other side. So let's flip to the other side. Notre Dame, Love and Price, outside of the 98-yard run happened. Yes, it happened. But outside of that, in the two playoff games, they have 34 carries for 98 yards and only one other 10-plus yard run. Can Notre Dame outside of Riley Leonard find any sort of running game?
But Riley Leonard counts.
He does count.
He counts. And again, Riley Leonard is that dude, man. Like, Riley Leonard has experience. Riley Leonard is a tough mother sucker. I did not curse. I said sucker. That dude is a bad mother. Shut your mouth. Like, he is going to run hard. He's going to run physical. He's going to take shots. And listen, can he beat you from the pocket? Brent, my answer is no. I don't think Riley Leonard can live in the pocket and win a football game. I think he knows that too. And I think he's smart enough to go, I ain't going to do it. I'm going to throw. I might throw it there. I might throw it there. I'm gone. And he's going to break tackles, and that's a part of his game that I just think is sensational. Listen, I'm interested to see Love. He's got a knee brace on in practice. That sucks. Like, but also, I'd go to the other side. Is Abdul Carter going to play?
Yeah, it's I think based on what you've read, it's like, yes, but you don't know. Maybe he's limited. Maybe he's in for a bit and then out. Who knows?
And listen, I've played this game a long time, Brent. I've been in the media for a long time. I know what this means, and this is James Franklin to a T. Like, we'll see. That's what it's going to be. He's got like an AC type of deal. And here's what that means. That means it's going to be painful. Like, whenever you stretch it, whenever you move it, and by the way, you got to push, 320-plus pound guys. Like, that's not a good deal. And here's another thing. Back in the day, Brent, I said number 11 suit up. He'd shoot it up. He'd play for his team. Nowadays, I don't think these kids think that way. I don't think they think it's the Final Four. He's got a lot to lose in the draft. A lot to lose. Like, this guy is a bona fide star top 10 pick. Like, he's going in the top 10. Big frame.
Five. I would say top five, but yes.
Top five. Like, he's that kind of good. So I wonder about that, and then Love. And this is the part of the 12-team playoff. Like, a big part of this is survival of the fittest. Like, who can stay healthy throughout the season? And then who can get healthy? And who can stay healthy throughout a playoff run? Like, you're seeing Notre Dame. I think these injuries are significant. Like, these aren't little injuries. I don't think they're as deep as some of the other teams. They're not as deep as Georgia, but they just beat them. That's all that matters, right? Like, so the survival of the fittest and the deepest team in the end, it's going to be a big difference. And for me, that makes a big advantage to Texas and Ohio State and those teams that have recruited really well for a long time. That can bring people, more people in that probably they might not be as experienced, but they're dang sure talented.
So who do you think is the first team to get to 20? Because I actually, my pick doesn't have either getting to 20 points.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Who'd you go with?
I went Notre Dame 19, Penn State 17, and the kicker doing his thing again, Jeter.
I wrote that down, by the way. I'm like, Notre Dame's kicker going to come up clutch again because stunk all year long.
He was hurt earlier.
What's his last? Did you say his last name's Jeter?
Yeah, Mitch Jeter.
Postseason guy. He's Jeter. He's Derek Jeter. He's a postseason guy. That's just what he does in the big moments, right? Derek Jeter steps up.
And that was you, by the way, that just made a baseball reference, not me.
Yes. And, okay, so the difference to me, Brent, of why I'm going with Notre Dame, and I've been on Notre Dame for a while. I love the toughness. I love the physicality. I love the tackling. Like, Penn State, shoot, they missed Ashton Jeanty 300 times. He just didn't have any space to go anywhere. I mean, he still forced a bunch of missed tackles. I think they're a very similar team. But daggone it, Brent, give me Riley Leonard. I can't bet against that guy. I feel like if he has the ball in his hands, he's going to run through whoever he needs to run through and make the play when it matters. It's not going to be with his arm most likely, but I do think Notre Dame's got it going. I think Notre Dame advances and plays for the Natty. But I do think I put 23-20 Notre Dame. And obviously with that kind of score, with this kind of game, I think they play this game 10 times. It's 5-5. Like, it's 6-4. I think it's evenly matched teams, but there's something about Leonard in that game against.
Yeah, Leonard in the game against Georgia forced 6 missed tackles. That was more than every other runner in the game combined. So he's that kind of good. And the vision that he showed in that game and what he's really shown all season as a runner.
That's what people don't understand.
That's a superpower.
It's not normal. It's not normal to run QB ISO and him follow his guy and all of a sudden cut backside. Like, it's not normal. Like, it's crazy that he can do that. So we're in agreement there. So we'll go to next the Cotton up. Bowl. This ain't going to be no surprise. Like, Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday night, Tuesday night, Monday night, whatever night you play this, Ohio State's the best team in the country. They have been since the playoffs started. They've been dominant. Jeremiah Smith has been him. Like, that dude has been incredible. So good. So nasty. The unstoppable force. He's been incredible. The passing game has been incredible for Ohio State. And here's what I love, Brent. This is the best pass defense in the country. The best secondary in the country. So, like, that to me goes a long way in deciding this game. It's the hottest team, in Ohio State versus a Texas team that honestly, their defense has been a little bit more suspect in the postseason, and their offense bailed them out big time last game, made some huge plays when they needed it.
Early in the game matters in this game immensely, because Ohio State has just borderline cut the throat in the first half of the first quarter in the first two games.
So violent, Brent. Jeez, cut the throat. Cow.
Yeah, but you've got to be able to hang around, get a stop, maybe get a have a three and out if you're Texas, because if you're down 14 nothing, much, you know, I don't think it ends well at all. But
this band, bro.
Yeah. Because, and like, you look at the, I think I looked at the ticket allotment thing. Each team gets like maybe 12 or 15,000. And there's like another 50 plus thousand that gets allotted to the general public.
Yeah.
That I would assume the majority of that is going to be Texas fans. Like, I assume this is going to be a mainly Texas crowd, and you have to keep that crowd in the game lengthy.
I think you're the only one that ever looked at that either, too. I mean, like, in the history of the world.
I saw a tweet. I just,
you're such a nerd. Such a nerd. Hey, that's fine. So yeah. I think obviously a fast start. Here's one thing that I'm interested to see, Brent, and you love this too, and we're both nerds. Very interested to see. Ohio State has feasted on man to man because they've got problems, and Jeremiah Smith is. You got 99 problems because of him. Like, he's so good, man. He's so big, so fast, so, knows what he's doing. Texas don't play a lot of man-to-man, which I think favors them. I think that helps their defense because they play with good vision. So Ohio State has manufactured a bunch of good plays. Now, listen, the big touchdown to Jeremiah Smith out of the slot was quarters coverage. It got him matched up on a safety. And if you get him matched up on a safety, bye-bye. Good luck. But the pass rush can get home for Texas. The secondary, really good, really disciplined. Playing zone, I think, helps them from that standpoint, playing the leak plays and some of that stuff that Ohio State's done really well. So I do think the matchups, maybe Texas can slow some of that down because Oregon couldn't, Tennessee couldn't.
No.
And Jeremiah Smith in the playoffs, Brent, I wrote this down earlier. Like, I think he's two playoff games, 290 yards, 13 catches, and four TDs. Like, that's
– he's the most unstoppable force in the game. And one where they could likely ride him to a potential national championship as a receiver. While Gracie goes nuts in the background. The question for me is opposite Barron. So, Barron has actually done his sort of consistent All-American self. Malik Muhammad opposite at corner. Malik Muhammad at number five, opposite Barron. What does Ohio State do to get to attack him specifically? And the other thing, we talked about this, I think the last week, maybe even one of the before previewing last games. The time element has allowed Ohio State to just self-evaluate and say, okay, what can we do and do well? They've upped their counter usage. They've said, hey, okay, our offensive line can block this well. And then they've added the Ryan Day elements of play action passing off of that and said, hey, our best players on the outside, let's go feed them. Texas, though, like, this is also a what would Belichick do kind of game to me, because Belichick would probably put his best guy on their number two and then double team the other guy.
Yeah.
And that's, do you have some element of that if you're Texas? Because if you spend too much resources now on Smith and Egbuka, then you've got Judkins and Henderson to deal with.
Well, that point you made, by the way, this is why football is so great to me, and this is why a 12-team playoff is great. Chip Kelly is not even remotely close to the same play caller he was to start the season. And here's the thing that sucks, Brent. I got to call defense against that. And that dude is his playoff game plan. Tennessee had no shot because they haven't even seen that. They haven't seen that at all. You talk about counters. Why is counter important? Because they're doing this now with smoke and mirrors. They're not trying to punish you. They're not trying to line up with an offensive line that isn't elite. They're not trying to line up and knock the piss out of you anymore. Like, they're going to absolutely fool you and half rolls and get it on the perimeter. And here's the thing about their run game. They've got such dynamic backs, and especially Henderson. Henderson in space is an absolute problem. Like, that dude can roll. Like, he doesn't have the greatest feel as a running back, but when he gets in the open space, by Felicia, like, he gone. And that's a problem. So I think Chip Kelly has manufactured it really well. Now, I'll say this. You talked about counter. I've had two games to see that. I've had two games, but now I know he's going to continue to evolve off of that. That's what play callers do. Yep. They continue to throw wrinkles off of wrinkles off of wrinkles. But I do think it, like, if you spin it to the other side, because I think the other side is just as cool, because when I watch Ohio State, this also isn't the same defense that I've been watching. And I think it's really cool because Ohio State said, man, screw this crap. Like, we're not going to do the same thing. Like, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. And they've kind of changed up their coverages. You know, they brought more blitzes throughout the season. Now they're playing a little bit more coverage in the back end, you can see, with them, and less aggressive, and just saying, hey, we got pretty good guys up front that can win. And so as much as Chip Kelly has changed, I think Knowles on the other side has changed as well, and changed with the way they deplore one of the best defenders in all of college football, yes, which is why you spent so much money on Caleb Downs, because that dude here, he was at our golf tournament this year. Just spend a little bit of time talking to that cat. He's different, Brent. He had a book. He was reading a book during our golf tournament. Like, yes, he's just, wow, a smart ball kid. Like, just loves ball. Dad played ball for a long time, and just they're spinning him down. Let him play the middle of the field safety. Let him play tight ends. Let him do cool different things. And you just see two. And again, you have to have it's so great to be able to say, hey, this guy can do so much. Let me do it. Well, here's the problem. When you have a guy that can do that and you put him now in a new spot, everyone else has to go to a new spot too. And so it's not as easy as just plug him into here, because everybody else has to adjust. Ohio State has so many guys that have played so much football, 50-year guys, fourth-year guys, experienced, that they have a lot of things they can do now in the back end and be super confusing. And that's where I wonder on the other side, what can Texas do? Like, a ground game that's been shut down by Arizona State, shut down by Georgia. They killed Clemson. But that to me is more interesting. Brent, how does Texas move the football?
Or sustain any level of offense, because I think that they'll hit a big play on an RPO. They'll hit some, you know, circle dial up something that gives them a free guy once or twice, maybe even early. But it's, can you sustain offense? Because that's really what's plagued them in a lot of these games, is they've hit things early and not been able to go through a lull of a quarter and a half or two where it's just a whole lot of nothing. And I think that it's going to be on Ewers to play a lot from the just sheer drop back game, where he's just spinning it out quickly. And I think that's what you're going to see, is the ball come out really quickly in this game and hope that they are able to just, you know, 10 play, 12 play drives, keep the clock running, use Gunnar Helm, his size on the inside. Hopefully, if you're a Texas fan, that's what you have to hope for. Yeah. Is that, hey, maybe Sark dials up something early and then we can sustain offense, which, by the way, Ewers gets to play against his, I guess, quote, former team.
Yeah. Former team that paid him a lot of money. Then he went to Texas, got paid a lot of money. The thing about that is, Brent, you say you hope. And you say you hope because you've also seen – here's what I loved about watching the Ohio State game again. Dude, they took away all the RPO game and all the easy stuff from Oregon. Like, that was really fun to watch. To watch them play the RPOs and getting passing lanes, like – they're good at it. And this DC, who comes from the Big 12, they majored in it. Like, they've seen it. They've seen these type of offenses for a long time. And they know exactly what they're doing. And they have experienced guys on the back end. They stop putting their cornerbacks on islands and playing just straight man-to-man. And their defense gets better. Like, that's not a surprise. I think they're doing a much better job of that. And so, you know, the RPOs, easy passing game, quick game. Ohio State, I've watched them play really well against Tennessee in coverage and against Oregon in coverage. I just – now, listen, Sark's masterful. And Sark Sark motions 60% of the time, Brent. On 60% of plays, he motions. Like, he's going to manipulate, and he's going to dial up, and he's going to have those throwback plays that are really good, and the reverses and the double passes. But can they consistently make big plays, consistently move the sticks to keep up with Ohio State? That's a big deal. Can they run outside? Because their perimeter run game is what's really kept them afloat. Ohio State, man, JT and Sawyer on the edges, both really good, really experienced. You know, two guys, I wrote this down because I just don't think these guys get talked about enough. Lathan Ransom and Cody Simon. When you watch the game, Brent, you know, one plays linebacker, plays one around. Plays safety. They fly and they play hard and they hit and they're physical and they're experienced. And those aren't guys that are talked about, but they're freaking good. And this defense, they're just good. Brent, I don't see the hole. I would attack their corners, but I think they're doing a really good job of protecting their corners now with zone coverage and the way they're playing. If you play cover two, which basically means the two high safeties cover the deep ball, corners can sit on the outside, and they don't have to be matched up on freak shows one-on-one. They just got to reroute those guys, force them to the safety help. Like, so I think I'm watching Ohio State, and I'm watching their defense, and I'm watching them morph and go, you know, and listen, they obviously playing Oregon and Tennessee, they are passing offenses. And so you have to do some of that. I just really like what I've seen from them.
What's your path? If we say, okay, we talk after the game on Friday night, Texas won, Texas as an underdog upsets Ohio State. What's that path look like? Because to me, it at least looks like their DBs making Makuba, Barron making great plays and getting a couple turnovers, and Ewers playing, not necessarily, I wouldn't say out of his mind, but just playing very efficiently and taking care of the football and getting a lot of first downs. That to me is what it looks like.
Well, here's another thing too. You know, Cameron Williams, who plays right tackle for Texas, dressed out last game, was an emergency guy, didn't play. He's a first round draft pick. Like, he's that kind of good. They've got their left tackle is a first round guy too. So can those guys dominate the football game? And when we saw that happen, Brent, against Oregon, when Sawyer and JT weren't guys and weren't dudes, there were some big plays to be made. So can Texas offensive line create some balance? Can they protect Quinn? Like, because they've got some dudes that can do it. And if you've got two first-round picks at tackle, you know, it's another reason why I think the run game has suffered a little bit, because Banks is the left tackle, right? And he's
– correct.
He was dinged up and hobbling. And then your right tackle – has been out, period. So if you get both of those guys back and you can run the football, and then Sark can use his magic, but they have to get some kind of running game going. But those tackles have to play big and really hold off 44 and 33 for Ohio State.
Yeah. The only other possibility there, I think, from where does Texas have an advantage potentially? Broughton, 45 on the interior, Colin Simmons, the five-star true freshman on the edge. You know, Ohio State's offensive line hasn't really been attacked and has played well over these few games. Can you actually create? Right. You haven't.
That's just crazy.
Once the game's out of hand and the way they've run the ball too, like the combo of all of it, but can they create some form of havoc along the defensive line? Can those two guys make a game changing play here or there? Because it's one where I just don't think these things are happening. I think this is a double digit Buckeye victory.
What you got?
34-20.
Oh, I hate when we're close. I just hate that. 34-21. Yeah. I don't like that at all. It's gonna be 34-31 now. You know, it's interesting because I do think when I look at matchups, and not to get the cart before the horse, but when I look at matchups, man, I think this is the best game we've got left. And if Ohio State doesn't lose to Texas, man, I think Penn State and I think Notre Dame, stylistically and the way they play, coverage, especially against, you know, Ohio State, I don't think that's going to be a good matchup. They'll have to find ways to zig and zag. But Texas stylistically is a decent matchup. Home field advantage, you know, maybe all these things, experience, maybe all these things come into play. But I tend to agree. I got 34-21 Ohio State, and I'm sure the Buckeye fans are happy. You should be, because it was Michigan happened, and because Michigan happened, dude, these dudes got in the lab. Like, they got in the lab, and they said, what do we need to change? How do we need to get better? And they have absolutely done it and changed schemes. They've changed who they are. They've changed their identity. And I think they've really said that we're gonna highlight four and we're going to highlight two. And I think actually Abuka's the guy this game. I think Abuka's going to go off. I think he's going to be the guy that's hard to stop, makes the plays. He makes those contested catches. We talk about Jeremiah Smith a lot. That dude, Emeka Abuka's a baller too.
Yep. Another first-round pick.
It's
another one.
And when you think about at the beginning of the season, if you would have said Ohio State's in the national championship game, everybody would have been like, yeah, they should be.
Yeah.
And when you talked about the money they spent on Caleb Downs, it was a lot of money. Like, so, like, those things are becoming well worth it. And you look at just the roster and the portal additions, like Judkins and Downs coming to that roster that then returned all of those guys that could have technically gone pro, but said, hey, I want one more ride. Now, granted, they didn't have to beat Michigan, but they might get the ultimate prize in the end.
What you trade? You trade that in a heartbeat.
Yeah. All right. So speaking of the portal, what's stuck out to you? I'm general for me this year with the portal is, like, we just talked about Caleb Downs and Quinshon Judkins. Like, those were massive people in the portal. Walter Nolan, what he did for Ole Miss. Like,
yeah,
those guys were in the portal last year. This year, it's a lot of depth, a lot of good players. It's not game changers to me. So what's stuck out to you?
You don't think – I don't know. I don't even know how you say his name fully, but Mateer, you don't think Mateer from Washington State to Oklahoma is a big deal? Because I do.
It's a very big deal. It's a very big deal, okay. But it's – and quarterbacks are always the –
I think that's day one, Brent. I think that's the most impactful one next year. I think that's a program-saving one because
– potentially,
you
yes.
Need, you need that guy, and I think – the way Oklahoma did it, if you didn't pay attention, is really slick and smooth. You knew he was going to be the best guy in the portal. Everybody knew that. Number one ranked player in the portal. Man, I really need a new OC. Wonder what I should do. Who should I get? Man, Washington State's quarterback is going in the portal. Ben Arbuckle's their OC. He's really good. He can call plays. He knows the kid. Coach the kid. Wait a minute. Brilliant. Like, and then listen, Oklahoma's lost a lot of guys to the portal too, which is not good. But I think you're starting to like that is a big deal. Get your guy. Cause I got news for you. Like, Venables is always going to put a good defense out there. I don't care where he is, what he does. Like, now that doesn't mean they're going to be elite of elite and the best in the country, but they will make you earn it. They're not going to be a defense that beats themselves. They'll come up with wrinkles. They'll slow people down. They'll have those guys in the trenches that are hyperactive, that penetrate, that make TFLs. And so, to me, that's the big one, and it's Oklahoma.
The only other one to me that I don't know how big it's going to be, but I think it can be, is with Garrett Nussmeier coming back to LSU, Berrion Brown from Kentucky going to LSU, I think could help him take a leap because he is uber talented, but he's played with a not great OC when Will Levis's last year, and then Devin Leary, who's one of the most inaccurate guys, and then a revolving wheel of quarterbacks this past year. So that's one to me where, hey, go play with a guy that's going to throw it all over the place and throw it well. That might be one that becomes a game-changing move.
And I think that's the thing that's hard for people to understand is I think you're going to look at a lot of these people and you're going to go, that dude didn't put up big numbers. Why is he such a big deal? If you don't have good quarterback play, you got no shot. Like, you have no shot. You can win every single rep and every single route, and you still aren't going to win. You're still not going to get the football. You can't see what you can possibly do. So this is why it's the most fascinating thing and why it's a little bit of a game of, you know, plug and play and take a chance on people is, oh, they weren't good in that system, but I think in this system – you know, just to use basketball analogy, like if you're a wing 3-and-D guy, you can play defense and hit the three. Like, there's a lot of systems where you're needed, you're necessary, and you're a big part. There's also a lot of systems where you're not. Like, forget that. Like, I want an all-around player. And so I think that that's the most interesting part is, but I said it before, you know, the stuff has gone in, you know, like with Georgia, I told you, Brent, they're going to sign 30 kids. Like, because every year, this is the norm now, man. Like, you're going to see mass departures. And listen, Rails are coming in February. I keep saying that. Like, it's not far around the corner when we're going to have a little bit more restrictions, which will make this more fun for coaches. But you've seen chaos in the portal, and you're going to continue to see more of it. Like, USC, what the heck, man? Are they going to have a team? I mean, that, like, to watch USC and what they've done, and then all of a sudden now you're seeing their best players take off, you know, linemen and linemen skill. Yeah, I mean, that's – geez, that's just – I wonder about
it. Doesn't bode well for sustainability for them. That's for sure. Now, okay. Speaking of Georgia, something that you and I have talked about, and you talked about, I think recently on maybe even after the Notre Dame game, about letting the pass rushers kind of go and pin their ears back and
changing the system.
Havoc,
yeah.
Create more havoc plays, things like that. We've talked about this for actually a long time, but they lose Michael Williams. They lose Jalen Walker to the draft. Chaz Chambliss. Going, he's graduating, and then now
Malachi Starks going to the NFL too.
Right. But now Damon Wilson, the sort of next guy from an edge perspective, puts his name in the portal, and I think even may have mentioned somewhere, I saw it mentioned, that that's kind of the reason, is the highlighting of the skill set. So that's a tough loss. If you're looking at loss for a team, because much like with injuries, you can sustain one or two, likely two. It's the third one that gets you. Like, losing him is actually, I think, a big loss for Georgia.
If they lose him.
If.
That's what I'll say to that, because there's a whole nother side of this too, man, where guess what you get to do as a player? Put my name in a hat.
Leverage.
Transfer portal. Hey, guys, I got a really good offer. They're offering me X. If you want me to stay, I want this. And so I think some of that's going to happen all over the country. You know, you're going to see that, and you've seen people jump in, and you'll see people jump out of the portal. But I mean, that's a business decision. That's like, you know, Saquon Barkley, they let him go test the market, and then he leaves and he goes to the Eagles, right? Like, he gone. So I think that's part of this whole process that's going to continue to keep happening.
Appreciate the Josh Pate Show checking in, chiming in there. Inflection point for every program right now. Nobody's mastered the new model yet. We even got Bill Belichick going around and visiting recruits in a suit and tie. So, yeah. Whole new world.
And listen, of college football. And that's a great point, because the new model that's changed so much, man, like recruiting your own roster consistently. How do I pay somebody, you know, X, or pay somebody Y? It's because you basically, you're an NFL guy now. Like, you got to balance your NIL budget and who you are, your and cap. What you are. And then guess what? You got to manage egos. Like, now I've got to go, wait a minute, everybody knows my QB's getting paid X. Like, how do I make sure that people in the locker room aren't pissed? And how do I make them earn it, not give it to them early where I get the best out of them? Dude, there's so many hats that coaches are having to wear right now that a lot
that's
of
why them you're seeing these general managers be hired by college programs.
That's what it is. That's exactly what it is in college football now. Like, you have to be a general manager. Like, that's 100% part of it. That's why I actually think Belichick's going to be pretty good at this. And you saw him trying to recruit, you know, the same kid we were just talking about, who obviously said, no, I'm going to Oklahoma. They offered him more money. And guess who he had call him? Brady and Gronkowski. Smart business. Dude, I'm talking
about
Tom Brady.
That's a pretty good Rolodex. I'm talking
to Gronkowski. Yes, like, those are – You use every chip and every advantage you have. Like, that's what you should do. That's what smart people do in business. And so I think that all these teams that are out, man, again, they're getting a jump on all the teams that are still playing. All the teams that are still playing are managing their roster and trying to win a championship with their guys. Everybody else is swimming. There are sharks on the beach just swimming all around, bro. Like, ready to get a piece of something. Like, I need this, I need this, I need that. Like, I need to get in the mix. And I've actually had some coaches say to me, like, that recruiting now is so much easier than ever. And I'm like, what do you mean? They're like, you know how easy it is to walk in a room and somebody go, it's going to take this. And you go, okay, I'm out.
Okay.
Like, I know
in
where
or
I
out,
stand.
In or out.
I used to have to wait like 4 years and recruit the mess out of you and your parents and find the decision maker, find the inflection points. And like, this is what I need to be and where I need to go. Now it's like, okay, well, money talks. And, you know, that's a weird thing of college football. And I think coaches, the best coaches during this era, how do they handle it? Like, how do they massage it with your team? How do you bring in guys to keep people on edge? There's so many things about this that is new, and people are going to have to make sure that they're evolving and changing, because this ain't the same old football it's been.
Well, that is very true. But on Thursday, we're going to get to watch actual football. Notre Dame,
yep.
Penn State in Miami. Then Friday night, Ohio State, Texas, big time brands, big time games, Final Four. Like, it, you're going to see team, you know, guys from the Final Four teams jump in the portal afterwards. That's for sure. Like you said, but in the meantime, we get to watch great football, hopefully. And I think Thursday night's going to be a great game. Very close. Might not be the prettiest football.
The other one you're not thinking.
Not, I mean, it might be great for one side, maybe.
Yeah, I think we'll get some pretty decent games. And then, you know, the fun thing is we get two more games again, and then we get one national championship game. And the cool thing about college football now is it's just, it never stops. Like, with the transfer portal and spring ball and all the things that are coming, man, like, we're going to always have a lot to talk about, which is really fun and really cool and really unique. So we'll continue to be here.
Especially like when we are the ones who talk, we talk about it. That's what, when you do that, it's nice to have things to talk about. Transaction season will be here.
And it's fun. So we will be here after Thursday night's game. And then the next game is Friday night, right? So hopefully weather doesn't impede that. In Georgia, by the way, like, just, they're already canceling things because there's a hint of there might be some snow, like a hint.
I'm hoping I don't have to go to work on Friday. I mean, that'd be nice.
That'd be great. It usually doesn't happen, by the way. It's a hint of snow. Speaking of, funny story for y'all to go out when you leave. I go to the basketball game tonight, our girls' basketball team. I'm a girls' varsity basketball coach at North Oconee. And get my wife's coffee from my mom. She had went to Dunkin'. I'm holding my coffee. My wife says, hey, will you grab my seat? She has a stadium seat that she sits in the bleachers. Yeah. And I'm like, absolutely. So I push the button. I go to step. I step on the curb, Brent, and straight ice. Like ice. And I slide and zoop, go up in the air.
You ate it?
Boing. Oh, ate it. Like, caught myself barely, dropped my coffee cup, but I was like, I'm saving my wife's because she loves coffee more than she loves me. But absolutely ate it. It was fantastic. I'm not old
luckily you're like four out of a five on the athlete scale or whatever Coach Fab used to tell you in terms of athleticism.
5.5, I think, but like I was glad it was me. And I'm not old yet because not super old yet because people were laughing. Like when you fall and people go, oh my God, are you okay? Like that's when you're getting really old. I love the Nate Bargatze. He used the at his last stand-up skit, he was like, old people when they fall, he was like, it's just like their body, their upper body and their lower body don't communicate. And when they go to fall, it's like, oh wait, I didn't know we were falling. And so thank goodness we didn't hit the curb and we fell on the sidewalk and ate it, but it was funny.
And also everybody is probably, if they saw you and saw that, they would know that the ground probably felt it more so than you did because of just you in general.
Small,
but
I'm not a small human being, but
no.
We will see you guys Thursday night. Hey, listen, everybody all year long, man, been cool. We've grown so much. Our numbers continue to grow. We appreciate that so much. Just, we're going to continue to just talk football, no agendas, we're not going to talk a ton about gambling or at all, or, you know, Brent's not going to use bad words like I did today. But we're going to talk about just college football. So we love it. We appreciate you guys joining us and helping us grow all throughout the season. And we'll see you Thursday night after the good old Orange Bowl.